Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening for Lehigh Valley Discourse. And I have two guests with me this evening, Jennifer Dyes and Joe Klinkoff, and I will introduce them to you shortly. Our topic is food cooperatives. And I'd like to just give a little background first before we get to Jennifer and to Joe to talk about what's happening here in the Lehigh Valley so that everyone has a little bit of background of what a food co-op is. It is a food distribution outlet that's organized as a cooperative rather than a private or public company. And they are usually consumer cooperatives where the decisions made regarding production and distribution and what is sold are chosen by its members. And there's probably about seven basic principles on which a food cooperative is based. I'm going to just explain them because we're going to be talking about some of them as we go through our program this evening. It has voluntary and open membership. It's a democratic member control, member economic participation, autonomy and independence, education, training, and information. We will be talking about that in some upcoming events. Cooperation among other co-ops, and a concern for the community. So typically, natural, local, and organic foods are offered. There are also some non-food household items that could be offered as well. And decisions about how to run the cooperative are not made by outsiders, but they're made by the cooperative's members, and they often exhibit, and this is what I think is key for us here, they often exhibit a higher degree of social responsibility than maybe their corporate peers would. The movement actually started in the 19th century in England, and it was started by a group of industrial weavers known as the Rochdale Pioneers. And the origin of the modern cooperative that we've been hearing about movement began in the 1970s. I think that must have been the Flower Children coming about and doing that. And the second wave has started as of the 1970s. The goals of the cooperatives are to provide an organic and anti-corporate alternative to the chain food stores, grocery chains. So they began to emerge, obviously, in college towns. That seems to be an incubator for a lot of this stuff, major cities, and also catering to the food-conscious individuals. So this evening, we're going to be talking to, as I said, to Jennifer Dyes and Joe Klinkoff, who are members of the Bethlehem Food Cooperative. And what I'd like to do is introduce you to both of them and have them tell you a little bit about themselves, and then we'll start talking about the Bethlehem Food Co-op. So Jennifer, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Could you give our listeners a little bit of background about you and maybe how you got to the food cooperative here in Bethlehem?
Sure. So the Bethlehem Food Co-op's inception was in 2011, and I have been involved in various ways and to different levels across that time span, kind of peaking in 2019 when I was chair for that year. So I've been everything from kind of a casual member to a volunteer to a board member to chair of the board. So lots of different opportunities to talk about what those different things have meant and different levels of involvement folks can have.
Terrific. So we'll get a lot of good information, listeners, so make sure you stay tuned. And Joe Klinkoff, how long have you been involved in this, and what is your background? How did you get into it?
I think I've been involved with the co-op for about 4 years, maybe a little longer, and I actually came in through the education committee. I had been teaching some fermentation classes at a local establishment and heard about the food co-op and wanted to offer my classes to them as well. And they're like, oh, join the education committee, and that's how we'll get you in. So it was fairly social for me at the time. Now I'm co-chair of the MOVE committee, which is our main operating committee of the co-op.
I can just hear some of our listeners thinking, okay, we've got a bunch of farmers markets around here. We've got, CSAs. We've got, what's the difference between a food co-op and these other opportunities that are out there in the community?
Sure. So as most folks will know, a farmer's market is seasonal and vendors come and bring a limited amount of their supplies, whether that's food or flowers or different spices or what have you, are there for a couple hours, pack up and leave, and then do it all again the next week. a CSA or community share agriculture is, they do it different ways, but it's kind of a weekly distribution usually of something that people opt into. The food co-op will be a full service grocery store located in the downtown area. And so if you think about any kind of typical grocery store that you've been in, shrink it down a little bit, add an emphasis to local food, sustainable practices, that's what the food co-op will be. So it's a bit more like a traditional grocery store, but we're run very differently, and our operating structure reflects our values.
Okay. And you said located in the downtown. So what is the area that the Bethlehem Food Co-op is looking at right now as far as where they would like to locate?
Yeah, we have said from the very beginning that we would be located in one of the two downtowns in Bethlehem because they are both technically food deserts, which means the people that live there don't have reasonable or easy access to fresh food. And so we said that from the beginning, and we know from our most recent market study, feasibility studies, et cetera, that the north side will be more viable for us in terms of trade. And so we are looking kind of a little bit broadly defined at the north side downtown area.
On your website, and as you indicated in your opening, you've been involved since the beginning, since 2011. So it's 2020. So what's been going on the last 9 years, and how soon can we expect to maybe see something a little bit more tangible?
Sure. So in 2011, we had someone post on social media what we sort of refer to as our red pepper story. And so she was making a recipe. She lived in the downtown area, north side, was making a recipe, needed a red pepper, had to go down, get to her car on on-street parking, drive to a grocery store, come back, find on-street parking. The whole thing took about an hour.
Boy, so that takes a while in a recipe.
It really does, right? You get stuck and then you have to go a ways to get what you need.
Right.
And so she posted on social media about it. Someone piped up and said, oh, where I lived before, there was a food co-op. And the momentum actually started just from that social media post and has blossomed to where now we're actively in site negotiations. And we have had hundreds of volunteers across the years. People have been committed to this for a long time. So that's how it started. And then in 2013 was the formal incorporation. So about 2 years later, we officially opened for membership. There was a picnic on a bright summer sunny day. A lot of us were there, signed up for membership, and we've been taking members ever since. Currently a little shy of 700.
A little shy of 700. I think we're currently at like 678 or 679.
Okay.
And that's households, not just individuals.
Okay. So you've made great progress since that 2013 and coming about, and I'm glad to hear that you're actively involved in some potential location negotiations. That's a good thing for our listeners to be aware of. So over this time, I mean, I belong to a lot of organizations, and so you've had to keep people engaged in this process since 2013 and keep them interested and keep them going. So, Joe, has that been a lot of what the education, you started in the education area, is that sort of how you kept people in touch?
We had originally four or five committees, and not only to engage our members, but to engage the community. So education was really about doing educational events. So whether we had a group that was teaching classes at the community college, Northampton Community College, under their umbrella for about 3 years, just to let people know we were out there. When you attended a class, we would hand out brochures and say this is brought to you by the Bethlehem Food Co-op, just to let you know we're in the area and we're coming.
Okay.
We do events. We do public events, mix and mingles with local restaurants who actually come to us and say, hey, that was really cool. Can we do it again? So that's been really good for us. So MOVE does most of that kind of stuff.
Okay, that's the operating group,
yes.
Operating committee within it. Okay.
Yeah.
And Jennifer, I know when we talked before, getting a food co-op up and running generally takes a while. You've talked with other cooperatives, correct?
Yeah, we use that one of those principles that you mentioned, number six, cooperation among co-ops.
Love.
That's right. And we have been talking with lots of co-ops as well as national consulting organizations about how to do this. There is very literally a guide to starting a food co-op that we still refer heavily to. I think one of the big misconceptions and frustrations that people have is just, you know, why is it taking so long? The reason it takes so long is because we're doing this as a community-based effort. Rather than having one person or even a couple provide funding and then opening a store, we're essentially fundraising for the entire thing. And so you have to build a base in order to be able to launch a formal capital campaign, which has to happen after you have a site. So there's a very specific order that we do things in, and it does take some time. Your average food co-op will take between 5 and 8 years to open. And so we're on track to still open within that amount of time.
Okay, since 2013?
Yep.
You're just 7 years? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I think the other challenge would be that you're working with volunteers to do all this.
That's right.
It's nobody's full-time job to do this, and everybody's time is very limited, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, including the board. You know, some of us on the board have had experience opening a business, but not a food co-op that mm-hmm. is owned and run and managed by its owners, its member owners. And so we're all learning as we go. We all have full-time jobs, and none of us have done exactly this before. So we need all hands on deck to make it work.
Sure. And when you're establishing something that's going to be sort of community shareholder-led, I mean, that's a different thing than opening your own business and having complete control.
Right. Yep.
You know, so there's a lot of things you've got to think about and prepare for as far as planning.
But really, that's what we're trying to do. Even though it's volunteer run, we're trying to open a business and have complete control.
Yeah. Wow.
So not only, you know, being a member is great because there's going to be benefits and but you own part of a store. And so part of your membership is we're looking for engagement.
Okay. And so... You had mentioned the number of members you have. What are some of the goals that you have? What's the vision for this food co-op in Bethlehem as far as maybe investments, individuals, businesses? Let's let our listeners know a little bit about, give them a peek at what you're thinking about.
Sure, that's a big question. There's a lot there. So we had talked about that there kind of isn't one thing that triggers a site announcement or being able to open the store, but rather a series of things that have to happen and kind of all line up. So you have to have the site, and we all know real estate negotiations are not the simplest thing in the world. You have to have the volunteer base to support the efforts, and you have to have the funding. So all of those three things have to kind of come together at the same time. So we do need a large number of members, and we're getting close to where we could support the capital campaign with the number of members that we have. We need those members to volunteer so that we have enough people to support both the store itself in terms of shopping there when it opens, participating in our committees to run it, to have their voice heard as part of the democratic member control, and to support the capital campaign on the back end in terms of making the calls, taking the notes, helping manage the finances, all of that. And in terms of our business partners, I think, Joe, you mentioned the member benefits program. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we've been actually, you know, one of the big questions we get is, well, I'm a member now. What do I get for my membership? Well, you own part of a grocery store. But we also have a list of community members who are offering discounted goods and services to our members now.
That's nice.
And so we hope that will continue when we announce our site and eventually open our doors.
Okay.
So it's restaurants, it's people who offer services. Typically, they'll give you a discount. They have certain products they'll give you a discount on, and all you have to do is show your membership card.
Okay. And they're probably involved because their target market is the folks that would utilize your store.
Many of them, yes, and some of them just sort of philosophically believe in the cooperative idea and want to support it, and that's the best way for them to do that.
It's sure. Local businesses. Yeah. They're supporting, you know, we're supporting the local community. That's one of our goals, so we support them as well, and they support us.
Terrific. All right.
So in addition to people who support us with their businesses, we will, of course, also partner with our local farmers, and other vendors or producers to be able to feature their food and products. We know that we'll open with about 21 paid positions in addition to our general manager.
21?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. We've known that from our very first market study, and the number hasn't shifted too much. So about 21 positions right at opening. And we will pay a living wage as part of that cooperative philosophy and concern for community. And we know that in addition to having the store staffed, we'll continue our community outreach initiatives to local schools, businesses, organizations, et cetera, to promote awareness of the importance of our food supply systems, the actual food that we put in our bodies, and cooperative enterprise as a viable business option.
Okay. Wow. All right. There's a lot going on there. I'm going back to that 21. 7 days a week? Is that what you're looking at?
The general manager will make final decisions about all kinds of specifics, but we do anticipate being open 7 days a week, hours that are friendly to those of us who work 9 to 5 or other hours. So open, available to people on their schedules.
And the other concept that when I was researching this was the concept of for community profit. Can you explain that?
I would be thrilled to.
Okay.
So for community profit means that when people shop at the store, the profits that are made don't go into a particular person's pocket. They will either go back to the member owners as part of patronage-based dividends, which means that the more that you shop there, the more money you would get back at the end of the year. Similar to REI, for folks who are outdoorsy or have ever shopped through them, they're a co-op and they have a similar model. It also means that the funds that we bring in, the members could vote on community organizations to give that profit back to. So we're not a nonprofit. We do make a profit, but the profits turn around and go back into the community.
Okay, so it's a different business model than most people listening would be aware of, because
yes,
nonprofits and for-profits, and this is for community profit. Okay, I'm learning something all the time when I do this show. That's great. You had mentioned about the cooperation among the other co-ops. And one of the things when I was researching, I mean, I was sort of surprised that there isn't a co-op already existing in the Lehigh Valley and that I had to go to outside Philadelphia. Is there anything within a couple hours driving that if somebody's listening to this and they say, well, I want to really see what a co-op is all about, can they drive there? Is there something that sort of is the model that you guys are looking at?
Yeah, there are several in the greater Philly area, and we have definitely been fortunate to be in touch with and mentored by pretty much each and every one of them at various times. So Weaver's Way is one of the older food co-ops in the area, having started in this, I believe, the 70s, and I think 73 specifically. They now have three different locations, and any one of them would be great to visit. There's Mariposa Food Co-op in Philly, and Swarthmore is perhaps a little closer to us, I think. And they're an interesting model in part because of their partnership with the college there. And as we all know, the Lehigh Valley has no shortage of colleges.
Right.
And so any one of those three would be great to visit. And within those three, there's three Weaver's Way locations.
Okay, Swarthmore's interesting. I lived down in that area for a while, so I must have left before they had that food co-op come into the college. But I'll have to get back there and see what it's all about. And some of the outside the area, you said you've been talking to a lot of people nationally, internationally. Are you like all over trying to gather your research?
Mostly within the U.S. because the laws about opening businesses and then specifically food co-ops or cooperatives vary from state to state and more so from country to country. So we've mostly been in touch with people in the states, but definitely across the states, and our national consultants. Important to note that actually those businesses, the consultants that we work with, most, I think all of their business models are also cooperatives. And so sometimes when they're working with us, it's for a donation or no charge. So they are part of co-ops who then turn around and help other co-ops, and they are sort of the center for aggregate information. So we work with them as well as with the specific co-ops that are also working with them.
And so you'll continue to do this once you're up and running as well. You use them
Absolutely.
For guidance, and or maybe you'll be sharing your story with others.
Yeah, we were told from the very beginning that we needed to hire a general manager with at least 5 years co-op specific experience, and we know that if for some reason we are not able to do that, we have an offer on the table standing from Weaver's Way that they will mentor our general manager for the first 5 years of business, which is a huge commitment from
them.
Oh,
that is.
And they'll also help us hire. So that commitment to these principles is real, and we have tried to help others who are a little behind us, but for the most part right now, we are still the recipients of so much help and support.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break right now. Listeners, you're listening to WDIY's Lehigh Valley Discourse, and my guests this evening are Jen Dyes, Bethlehem Co-op member and former board president, and Joe Klinkoff, who's a Bethlehem Co-op member and the Education Committee and the Move Committee.
Move Committee.
All right, now, this is Sally Hanlon for WDIY.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia with a special request for all of our listeners. Many of you support the arts in all of its forms. If you have tickets to a live theater concert, event, or any kind of performance and the show has been canceled due to the virus, please consider donating the money instead of asking for a refund. An event like this can severely damage or end arts organizations. Thousands of artistic professionals have jobs and health care needs, and they're all at stake. Please continue to support these organizations that need to survive through these cancellations. Thank you very much.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guest this evening, Jen Dyes from the Bethlehem Co-op, and she's former board president, and now she's slacking. She's just on the board. She's just on the member volunteer. But I don't think you can slack on that group at all. And Joe Klinkoff, who is a Bethlehem Co-op member, Education Committee. Explain what the MOVE Committee is.
Thanks, Sally. Yeah, we say MOVE Committee all the time, and it's really an acronym, and some people just question it because it doesn't make a ton of sense, but it really does. So MOVE is M for membership, O for outreach, V for volunteerism, and E for education. So we try to keep our activities focused on those four areas.
We've mentioned a couple of times members and the shareholders and all that kind of stuff. What I was, most surprised about is once you become a member, you're a member. There's not an annual fee, correct? It's just a once-and-done investment.
That's right. And to be very clear, we aren't actually shareholders. Pennsylvania and shareholders for co-ops don't go well together.
Oh, okay.
So I just want to make that note. But it is an equity payment or an equity investment. And so a one-time payment of $300 for a household. I mean, that doesn't have to be relatives. Anyone who lives together can be considered a household. And one time, so not annual. And we do have an option for people to do payment plans, which would be monthly for about a year, $25 a month to become a full member. And from the moment that you make your first payment, you're considered a full member of the co-op.
That's very interesting, because I know when I joined my CSA, it was going to be an annual event, and it was seasonal, mm-hmm. so I had a very limited time that I could partake in that.
That's right.
It was more than that investment that you just mentioned. So before we go on to too much else, I want to just get back to the Bethlehem model that we talked about a little bit before break, because I had not been aware that you're making this full service, full shop, and taking some government supplements, correct?
Yeah, so we want to be sure that the food co-op is accessible in terms of shopping opportunities for our entire community, since the point is to address the issue of a food desert and make sure that we are community-owned and community-run. We want to be sure that our store represents our entire community. And so we will have an emphasis on local food, organic food, and sustainable practices. We will also carry conventional items, and we like to say that we'll carry everything from, you know, tomatoes to toothpaste. And so you should be able to do your full week shopping there. And we do also plan definitely to accept SNAP, WIC, other supplemental programs like that. Our members will have member benefit days when the store opens, or member special deals, something along those lines to recognize member owners. But again, our general manager will decide what those specifics are, but there will definitely be opportunities for members to save a little extra money.
We talked about activities before we get started up, and you mentioned the craft and you mentioned the food conference, but there's also been other activities, correct, Joe, that you've been doing?
Part of our outreach, we have initiated a program with William Penn Elementary School called the Hubs Program. And our idea was to get out into the community and make them understand that we are completely inclusive and make the co-op available to them. And so we worked with them to develop a program where they would invite families to join the Hubs program. They made, I think it's a commitment for a year worth of meetings, and then they're eligible for a scholarship to the co-op itself. So we give them a membership at the end of their commitment.
Okay, and what do you actually, do you teach about food? What actually happens in those meetings?
We actually do the same types of activities that we do with MOVE in the co-op. There are usually, we provide a dinner that evening. Someone local, typically one of the local restaurants, will give us a dish or two because it's their family time.
Okay.
We typically meet a little earlier, 5:30 to 6:30. The kids are there as well because it's in the school. But like this year, one of their things is they are thinking about starting a community garden.
Okay.
And so we're going to get that group engaged in that whole process from soup to nuts, from the vision to finding a proposal to finding a piece of plot of land in the city that maybe we could turn into a community garden for them.
And at this point, it's just in William Penn.
Right now, it's just in William Penn. It has to do with how the school is organized that allows us to come in as part of the community.
Okay. All right. Well, and most of the schools like to get engaged in some kind of community effort. So mm-hmm. You've got to keep yourself, so you've got volunteer efforts at other places as well. So I'm sure schools listening might be calling
you. There you go.
We know that as an area becomes more walkable, in addition to real estate values going up and the community becoming healthier, community investment in itself grows. And so that's part of the idea here is to have people get involved in their own community, whether that's at the neighborhood level or the city level. We know that that happens, and we're hoping that the Community Hubs program is the start of that on a smaller scale for the William Penn families.
And I think it's maybe important here to introduce a concept that you mentioned, Jen, when we were talking before the show, that, and I think it's filled the bill for what your needs were when you moved to the area, and that's the third place.
Yes, definitely.
But let's talk about third place and what that is and how this concept sort of embellishes that.
Sure. So I'm going to start with my story a little bit, which is that I moved to Bethlehem, didn't know a soul here, moved here for work, and struggled for a solid number of years to find a group, to find friends, to connect with people, to feel any sort of sense of kind of home here. And when I got involved with the food co-op, what I found was that not only did I then learn a whole lot and gain a little bit of a purpose in terms of opening the co-op and filling a food desert and things like that, I also found a good number of friends. Some of my closest friends are involved with the co-op. And so the co-op became my third place. Most of us have a first place, which is our home, a second place, which is our work. And then most people have a third place that could be a church, a community organization, any sort of third option where you're filling your time and having some social interaction. And so for a lot of us, the co-op is that third place. We have a lot of fun together. We work hard together. We have a common purpose. And it's just an excellent group to join, to get to know people, to feel connected to the community, to feel a little better sense of home here in the Bethlehem area.
Well, I can see where these hub programs would work well to be the third place, because I know that having lived in Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton over the years, that often we don't even know the neighbors next door.
Right.
You know, because everybody's got busy lives and they're working and they've got the kids and, you know, so that's a great source of being positive, healthy, focused, and meeting your neighborhood.
Yeah. You know, if you know anyone who grew up here, they can't go to the grocery store out on the street without bumping into five people they know.
Right.
But if you didn't grow up here in particular, it can be harder to connect with someone or connect with a community.
Yep.
Having a community of kind of guaranteed like-minded people, at least in one way, is certainly a big step up into feeling that sense of community.
Yeah. And is it possible for us to share some of the business members that are a part of the co-op? Because I think that our listeners should be aware of those businesses in the area that are really taking an extra step to be a part of the community.
Absolutely. I'm certain we're not going to hit all of them because there are between 25 and 30 around right now, I think. But some of them include DeMachi's, Lit, Jumbar's, Musselman Jewelers, The Flower Shop. Who am I missing, Joe?
American Shaman CBD.
Well, you get an idea, listeners, of the types of restaurants, and I'm sure if you would inquire or maybe go on the website.
Yes, if you go to bethlehemfood.coop, you'll see membership and then member benefits program.
Okay.
And also, our sub team for member benefits is actually providing them with little window decals now. So look for the supporter of Bethlehem Food Co-op in their window.
Okay, because I've always believed that we have to reinvest in our own community, and that just really makes it a much healthier community. So
yeah,
that's great to hear and to go. We talked about third place, and we've talked about basically bringing everybody together. And we've talked about some of the social responsibility that people feel now that they are just a part of this, even though we don't have a physical place.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think that the next year or so will bring as far as a focus and the direction? I mean, Jennifer, you've been pretty much involved with all those steps to get to this point. What's next?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest steps for any startup food co-op is when we move from what we internally refer to as 2A to 2B, which is where you're switching from preparing for when you're going to be able to announce a site and launch a capital campaign to actually doing those things. So it takes a very long time to get enough membership, enough funding to even launch a capital campaign. You sort of have to have a base. You have to have money to make money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to raise that first little bit of money and then raise a whole lot more. So I would hope within the next year or so, we would be launching that capital campaign, which is important because it's going to be more than $2 million that we will have to raise between member owner loans traditional funding and grants. It's a lot of money, and we will need every hand on deck possible. A little less than a year ago, I had sent out my State of the Co-op letter as chair, and one of the things that I said was that we would need to at least double our volunteer base in order to support a capital campaign. We've grown since then. It's been a positive to see the involvement from our member owners grow. We still need more. So if our community wants to see this happen, and I think that we do, it's vital that people really understand that if they want this to happen, they need to put a little bit of time into it so that we can have the support we need to be able to do these big last few tasks to get us to opening.
Well, and I think it's got to be a rather tricky schedule trying to get a piece of property to have and then start your capital campaign. You know,
yeah. You basically have to have it planned before you can sign on the bottom line,
right.
And then the volunteers and the money have to line up. It's a little bit tricky, yes.
Yeah, that's a lot of logistics to try and work around, and with timing, and especially with a tight real estate market, things that go up quickly, it's going to be a challenge. So listeners, if you're hearing this and you've got some insight and you've got some desire to be a part of something like this, now's the time to get online and let them know your availability or your interest, because they could use the additional manpower and financial power and whatever mm-hmm. else is needed.
Absolutely.
Okay. Joe, I'd like to go back to some of the things that you had talked about. You were doing food presentations.
Mm-hmm.
What's your background in that, and what kinds of things did you do?
What? So my background is actually finance and IT. But okay. I've been a foodie forever. I've literally been in a kitchen since I'm old enough to be in a kitchen. I work at a local restaurant. I've been in food service for over 30 years. I just like food. So part of that has been as making better health choices, life choices, I've learned about fermentation. And so I was running a series that goes from the simplest ferment, sauerkraut, through homemade miso, which is a very complex ferment. So we did it across the size of a year.
That is a lot.
And so I was doing them locally. And then I heard about the food co-op. Actually, my first introduction was a flyer at one of the local restaurants that we frequent, the Joint. And so I'm like, oh, we have a food co-op. Maybe they'd like to do that. So then I got involved with the education and the program that we ran at Northampton Community College. And they still tag me at least once or twice a year to do a class down there. So I'm the foodie. That's why I know the restaurants on the list. Like, I'm all about food.
So other than fermenting, is there another area of expertise that you have brought to this process?
Well, I don't know about this process, but I also like to bake, specifically breads. So part of my classes is a sourdough bread class.
Okay.
And my hope is, as we go forward, as the co-op, I'll have an additional space to continue that kind of education for the community, for people who are interested.
Okay, so as you think about the layout for the food co-op, will there be like a conference room or something that you're hoping to have and have it outfitted, or a kitchen, or
the space of our dreams?
Okay,
absolutely has space for people to gather, maybe like a little coffee bar, or juice bar, or something like that, or
Learning
host
kitchen,
some classes.
Yeah.
Yeah, something. And we'll have to see what we end up with in reality. But whatever it is, we will host events in the space 100%. It's just a question mark as to what the layout will be.
Right.
Okay. And how movable things are, or where the electrical outlets are.
Correct.
Not exactly that kind of stuff. Yes. We do know we'll have grab and go items. So hopefully that would be something that could be easily rearranged for some chairs and whatnot.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about the voluntary and open membership. Anybody can be a member, and it's $300 for a household.
Correct.
Okay, democratic member control, so that's board and voting. Is that how that works?
Yep. So every October, there is an election for a handful of board members. We stagger it so that the whole board doesn't turn over at once.
That's good.
Yep. And any other major issues that are happening or that we need community input on. As an example, this was outside of the annual meeting, but recently there needed to be a member vote on amending a bylaw. Part of our constitution says members have to vote on that. And so an email went out to the membership, a voting link, and people had to weigh in on whether or not they thought that in this specific instance, it was a question about the general manager being on the board or not.
Mm-hmm.
But any changes to our bylaws require member votes. And so there's the board elections, bylaw issues, and then as we get closer, we will continue to solicit input on prioritizing different aspects of inventory. So you can't always have something that is local and organic and sustainably practiced. we'll need input on that. We'll also need input on how many conventional items to carry. All those kinds of examples of choosing inventory our members will have input into.
Really? Mm-hmm. That surprises me that you wouldn't just let that with the general manager.
They'll be the one to make the decision for sure.
Okay.
But we will solicit input because if people are going to shop there, we need to know they're going to buy what's there.
Well, listeners, I hope you're getting a good idea of what's going on behind the scenes right now with the Bethlehem Food Co-op. But we're going to take another short break. My guests this evening are Jen Dyes, Bethlehem Co-op member and former board president, and Joe Klinkoff, who is a member of the board and part of the Education and the Move Committee. This is Sally Hanlon for WDIY's Lehigh Valley Discourse.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia with a special request for all of our listeners. Many of you support the arts in all of its forms. If you have tickets to a live theater concert, event, or any kind of performance and the show has been canceled due to the virus, please consider donating the money instead of asking for a refund. An event like this can severely damage or end arts organizations. Thousands of artistic professionals have jobs and health care needs, and they're all at stake. Please continue to support these organizations that need to survive through these cancellations. Thank you very much.
If you are a Golden Age folkie and love the music of Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, Joan Baez, and the Kingston Trio, WDIY is the place to be on Monday nights. From 7 to 9 p.m. on folk classics, all of that great music from the late 1940s to the late 60s will fill the airwaves, and we will welcome your ideas about the artists and songs you'd like to hear. Folk classics, Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on WDIY.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guest this evening, Jen Dyes, who's a member of the Bethlehem Co-op and former board president, and Joe Klinkoff, who's also a member of the Bethlehem Co-op Education Committee and MOVE Committee. And one of the things we would like to make sure that our listeners are aware of, especially if you found this idea somewhat intriguing, exciting, and you're thinking, wow, it'd be really great to have a place like this in the north side of Bethlehem, is how does one go about getting involved and what kind of opportunities are available? And, you know, are you looking for some specific skills? And if I volunteer, can it be short-term, or am I in there for life?
Yeah, absolutely. Board members only. No, totally kidding.
Yeah.
So the lowest commitment thing that people can do is actually just to follow us on social media. We are very active on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So like or follow us on any one of those, and you'll find a lot of information there. Next would be just visiting us as we are tabling out and about the community. Generally, in the summer in particular, you can find us at farmers markets, Veg Fest, and other festivals around. So we're quite active, and you can look at our calendar on the website or social media to see where we're going to be. Next would be to attend a meeting, whether that is a meeting of the MOVE committee, the finance committee, or a board meeting, which are open to the public. So attending one of those to get a sense of what we're about. And then volunteering, and we'll talk a little bit more about what those opportunities are. Anything that I just listed, you do not have to be a member to do. We, of course, encourage you to join and become a member at any time, but you don't have to be involved with us. If you just want to volunteer to make it happen, and that is your contribution, we would be thrilled to have you.
Okay. And listeners, I'm sure if you're involved in volunteer organizations, you know that there's always more people that sort of are around but not necessarily rolling up their sleeves when things occur. So there's a great opportunity here. I think, Joe, you mentioned there's some specific skill sets that you would really love to have as a part.
Yeah, MOVE is always looking for a few extra hands. If you'd like to attend a MOVE meeting, again, it's open to the public. You do not have to be a member. Typically, we meet at the Fowler Center. Sometimes we meet with the Hubs group. But in either case, you're welcome, and we would love to have you. Currently, we're really in need of some graphic design skills. So if you're a graphic designer, and maybe it's your hobby rather than your job, but we'd love to have you. We'd love to hear from you and see what you know how you want to get involved. We could also use a volunteer developer or coordinator. Typically, we just run by the seat of our pants, getting volunteers organized, and we would really love someone who would like to coordinate that and develop those as more people come in.
Okay. We've come a little bit, well, a little bit of a long way with volunteer organization. We have things like talking points if people volunteer at a table, but ultimately it's still sort of who's around and who can do it. And we're hoping as we grow and as the organization grows to be a little bit more intentional with those efforts. But again, it's a capacity issue. So we need
sure.
more hands.
Right.
Other skills I think we could use are grant writing. And depending on the person and their level of experience, there are some paid opportunities. We've been fortunate to receive some grants that would pay for assistance with things like that. And community organizing in general is always just helpful experience to bring in. We also have more sort of like one-time opportunities with events set up or tear down, record keeping, data entry, that kind of stuff. Also, if anyone's going on any vacations in the near or distant future and you look, you might likely find a co-op there. And so if you're willing to take a little bit of time out of your vacation, visit a co-op, take some pictures and send them to us, we would love to feature that on our social media. So that's a super easy opportunity. It just requires a visit and an email to us with the photos.
Oh, that's great.
It's also a bit addicting. Because you'll find that once you do that, and once you kind of get into the co-op vibe, like every time you plan a trip, you're looking for a co-op. And you go in and be like, oh, I'm a member of this co-op. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm a member.
So it's a sense of community in a new location.
Yeah. Come in and look around. These are the challenges we have. Oh, make sure you do this. All kinds of advice. And also it's just neat to see, like, the cooperative principles are usually displayed. And so how does this co-op do it versus that one? What organizations are they donating money to? The Dill Pickle Food Co-op in Chicago has a neat pickle nickel program. Oh, I'm going to blank on some of the specifics, but the general idea is that I think if you bring your own bag, you get a pickle nickel, you put it in one of three containers that go to one of three community organizations. And so that hits both sustainability and community support. And it's just kind of fun with the pickle nickel thing.
I never would have thought about that. That's pretty interesting. Well, and Jen, you mentioned something that's going to be very sort of intense coming up, and that is the capital campaign.
That's right.
And so you're going to need volunteers to help do that, knowledgeable volunteers. Mm-hmm. But you've already been able to get some traction in that area, correct, as far as donations or contributions?
That's right. And so we have laid some of the groundwork, basically, for that campaign. We have a board member who is pretty experienced with fundraising and is leading that effort. But prior to the actual launch, we have applied for some grants, and we have been fortunate to receive support from the city through community development block grants for two consecutive years, totaling more than $100,000 in support from them, which is fantastic, and which goes toward things like architect consults as we're looking at plans. It goes toward making sure that our pro forma is in order and actually works and demonstrates that we're viable. Making decisions based on that pro forma is critical, and so it has to be accurate. It also goes a little bit toward programmatic support, a smaller amount, so that's been huge for us. The other grant that we have received a few times is called the Howard Bowers Grant, and that goes toward education both for the board and general membership. We've used that for conference attendance. We have hosted some experts or consultants here in Bethlehem for the board and for members who are interested in attending. So we've gotten some funding through those opportunities, and we do also have what's called a fiscal sponsor, which allows people to donate to us. So because we are not a traditional nonprofit, we can't take tax-deductible donations. Certainly anyone who wants to give us money can, but if you want the tax deduction, we need to go through a fiscal sponsor, and we do have one. So if anyone's interested out there in making a donation and getting a tax deduction, we'd be happy to speak with you about that. And then, Joe, do you want to talk about this year's conferences that we're maybe using some funding for?
Typically, we use some of that funding. There is a large conference held this time of year. It's called Up and Coming. And basically, it is all startup co-ops. So a startup co-op is a co-op who hasn't yet opened their doors, but is going through this 5 to 7 year process. And we attend typically every year. I was lucky enough to go last year. And just to see that group of people and all those co-ops in that room is amazing. And some of them do have their doors open. And the only reason they're there is to push the other ones forward. Like, it's just a really good conference. But there's tons of educational opportunities. There's capital campaign classes. There's advertising and how to do your swag and what kind of events and activities can you run to get your membership really activated or motivated or bring more members in. I attended last year, and we have two members going out this year as well.
And where is this?
This year it is in Milwaukee. Typically an established co-op will sponsor.
Or be sort of the housing host or something.
Mm-hmm. And they always do a tour of local co-op or co-ops, depending. Once you get in the Midwest, you can't throw a stick and not hit a co-op. Like, there's a lot of them out there. That was really surprising to me. And then they do, typically, they have an event where last year's event was dinner with, I think we had salmon from a co-op fishery. So they try to source the meals with people who are doing it and being successful at it.
Interesting. Okay. Now, you mentioned a term that I'm not familiar with, swag.
Oh, swag. Buttons, pins. I have my T-shirt on today. Like, we always like to have our swag. The yard signs. I know that people in Bethlehem have seen the yard signs, and they've been a lot of fun. We've literally just done events to come pick up your yard sign. If you're a member, you get a yard sign. And so we take the road full of them, a bunch of people show up, and it's been really fun.
So it's the branding end of sure everybody knows who's involved and what they're doing. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about the next steps, but there's sort of some critical, really, milestones that you have to meet. And one is the membership level to mm-hmm. make sure. The other is getting some more volunteers and right. getting them educated. Mm-hmm. And so I would, and I'm going to assume here, you're not supposed to do that, but, you know, this is a critical year.
Definitely.
So there's a lot of pieces that are out there that you're trying to pull together now mm-hmm. and bring into making this thing become more tangible.
Yes. Absolutely. I know we're harping on the need for volunteers, but that's because as we get closer to launching a capital campaign, site announcement, et cetera, there's a very specific order that we will go in that we know from historically what's worked and our national consultants how to do this. So we know that once we sign a lease or whatever it's going to be, once we have a location identified, we announce it. We take about a month to build membership off of that announcement. We launch a capital campaign and we start raising that almost $2.5 million actually. And that again is done through member owner loans, traditional loans, and grants. So we start working on all three of those prongs all at the same time, while we're also starting to work on construction, because whether it's a new build or remodeling an existing build, there will be construction to get it up to what we need to be a grocery store in the space. And we are also continuing all of our current activities, likely even expanding them in terms of educational efforts and community outreach, because again, people have to know that we exist, what we're about, that we will support low-income folks, and that we'll be out there and available. So we're doing all of that at the same time, which is why it's so important to have more hands. So for instance, we aren't just doing the initiatives that we're doing now, which we have probably between 30 and 50 active volunteers. We're also adding on top of that the three prongs of the capital campaign, and anyone who's done grant writing knows that that can just be a full-time job on its own, in addition to calling all of our member owners and seeing if they're willing to make a loan, large or small, to us, and going to a bank with a packet of information that we have to develop about what a co-op is, what we are, why we know we're viable, our pro forma numbers, tweaking the pro forma as changes come up, doing all of that, plus the community outreach and making sure people know we exist. That's a lot, and we definitely can't do it with only 30 to 50 volunteers.
Well, and as you said before, everybody is volunteer, so it's not that everybody can look at this as a full-time
gig.
Yeah, you know, but everybody's pieces joined together will make the whole.
Yep. And we do have a great time doing all of this hard work. So the need for volunteers in some ways, while it's hard work and some of it is serious, there's a lot that's just some time spent together where there's a lot of laughter. Move, our main committee, has hosted ice cream socials during meetings. So we have a really good time. It's fun. It's something that's engaging. You're doing something good for the community. There's really no downside. It's just some time that we really need people for.
Right. And you had mentioned some of the business owners that were a part of the co-op, but there's also some community organizations that you work closely with or aligned to. Joe, who are some of those organizations?
We try to work with the Kellen Foundation regularly. They've already said they're interested in participating in the food conference this year. Buy Fresh, Buy Local, Lehigh Valley. We have a joint venture with them. We're part of their group to make sure, because we're what they're about, buying fresh and buying local.
And a desert area.
A food desert, a designated food desert. Hopefully that blip will go away once we're open. And the Lehigh Valley Food Policy Council. We try to keep them in the loop. Basically, anyone that's about being healthier or making healthier choices, Weston Price, we table at their event regularly. So any kind of community who have share the same ideals that we do.
Is anybody from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission a part of this group?
They're certainly aware of us, and we have spoken with them. All of the kind of city folks have been wonderful to us. So almost every member of city council is a member of the Bethlehem Food Co-op. They've provided us guidance on where we can get funding, additional funding. We've spoken with them about kind of where they can help us in terms of, as an example, if we needed to negotiate some kind of parking situation somewhere, what they can and can't do. So we've been in frequent conversations with them. The Northside 2027 initiative, we had a board member who was a part of the planning team for that. And we were also thrilled to see the number of folks who attended those open meetings and noted the need for a grocery store. Some, most specifically, the Bethlehem Food Co-op. There was a lot of support for us there. And we were thrilled to get to have some input on what that could look like. So we've been really fortunate in all kinds of different ways with the city and different planning opportunities to participate in those.
Okay. Going through my head here, trying to think if there's anybody else that I've come in contact with that would be appropriate, but I'm sure I'll think of it after this show is over and I'll have to get in touch with you and let you know. But so I'm going to just, I mean, we know, Jen, what you have gotten from this, which is your third place and, you know, a sort of a sense of community.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what has this brought about for you, being engaged in this?
For me, it's really about community. I would call it one of my third places. I have a lot of interests.
Between finance, I don't know.
It's definitely a third place. Jen said it has been fun. Like, I've met a lot of new people, become involved in my community, understanding a little bit how that works, how city and local government works. Like, it's been a learning process, which I also enjoy a lot of. So I'm learning. There's good skills that come out of being part of this group.
Well, and I think the timing, I mean, everybody's becoming much more conscious about what they eat, what they put in their bodies, in industrial processes versus natural or home cooking or whatever you want to talk about, organic versus, you know, these large farms that are industrial based. So I think your timing is really good to sort of capture on that. I think it's probably been a little hard up to this point to have people understand some of that need and why it's important.
Yeah, you know, you spoke earlier about the kind of origination of food co-ops with the Rockdale Pioneers and others. Important to note that food co-ops really originated with communities of color and in other countries. And the first ones that came to the U.S., the Rockdale Pioneers were not in the U.S., but it kind of came here shortly after that. And then the second wave that happened in the 70s, which is the model a lot of people are familiar with, which was a lot of bulk bins, kind of maybe warehouse or barn style, where you would go in, fill up a bag, head out. I know there used to be a Bethlehem Food Co-op that was a little bit more aligned with that model. This is really kind of a third wave, which is where people are very conscious of local, sustainable, et cetera, like you're speaking about. And that is a little bit more in the style of a traditional grocery store. So as our communities and our priorities culturally continue to evolve, so too do co-ops. And so we will be a part of that third generation of co-ops that are opening with the emphasis on concern for community, sustainable practices, local, organic, et cetera.
Okay. Well, we're about ready to wrap up the show. The time has gone so quickly. Thank you both, my guests. Thank you, Jen Dyes and Joe Klinkoff, both from the members of the board of the Bethlehem Co-op, and for all of your education and all of your volunteer. Thank you for doing that for our community.
Thank you so much for having
us.
Yeah,
thanks.
And I want to thank Neil Heaver, who's our operations director, and I want to thank everyone who's listening tonight. Thank you for listening to 88.1 FM WDIY. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse.